Is it a crisis? Hi, I'm Jarvis Smith, and my new show, Lean Into Clean, will inspire, impress and inform. What can we all do to clean up our lives so the next generations and, of course, our beautiful planet can thrive? Perhaps we've all lost our way. Lean Into Clean will showcase how we might remember, refocus and restore the natural ways so we can again live in balance and harmony with life on Earth and all its inhabitants. It's Monday, it's 1 o'clock. You know what time it is. It's time to get leaning into clean. This is Jarvis Smith. I'm UK Health Radio. Thank you again for joining us. Wow, well, what a week we've had this week. It was declared on the mainstream news, the legacy news, the news that's been around forever, that this was, in fact, this last year was the hottest year on record since records began. Of course, there is an absolute association to the way that humans are living on the planet and creating emissions, which creates temperatures to rise, which is causing the issue for the climate crisis. So we all know about that, but what are we going to do in our lives in order to mitigate and help the planet regain its temperatures so that we don't lose control? So many are calling this runaway climate, many calling it a crisis. Many are calling it climate change. So, you know, what camp are you in? Is it just changing? Is there a crisis, as you say in my advert for the show? And is it running away from us? And what can we do to help? So this week's guest is, well, I mean, he's an amazing guy, actually. Gianavelli, he runs a community called Kind. So I think, you know, it really does do what it says on the tin. But I've asked him to come and join us because I think this is a moment in time in history, in you know, humanity's evolution, that if we can't perhaps remember kindness and inclusiveness and, dare I say it, the love of one another, without this polarized world that we live in, which is causing chaos and economic and financial and climate crisis. You know, many, many clever people in science and journalists and historians are calling this now a polycrisis. Now, what does that mean? It means when a number of factors come together all at once, a bit like this quote that we know about as a perfect storm. When they all happen at the same time, it creates an exponential effect of crisis. So with wars, with climate, with economics, with dysfunction, with polarization, all of these systems that are predominantly caused by the way that we're living in the earth, whether it's our anger for another religion or another sect of people, if it's our overusage of fossil fuels, if it's et cetera, et cetera. So we're going to be talking to Gianavelli. Now, he has, well, he's inspired me. He's, you know, he's a lot younger than I am. I'm in my 50s now, and, you know, he's not. But he has inspired me in such a way that I wanted to get to know this guy. I wanted to get to know what he was up to. And the more I kind of talked to him and spoke to people that are part of his community, the more I realized that he is really, really trying to change the world. So, Jenna, welcome to Lean Into Clean. Thank you for coming to join us.
Thank you so much for having me, Jarvis. Appreciate it.
It's an absolute pleasure. I really genuinely appreciate it. For those of you that are listening in, if you hear some weird noises, I'm on the road today because I'm actually going to run my spirited business retreat. So I've had to leave Yorkshire. I'm now in London and I'm on my way to Somerset. So I am in an electric car for those of you. So if you hear some funny beeps or sounds in the background, that's what. But this is great because I can actually produce a live show from the car these days, which is magical. So, Jenna, tell us quickly, if I were to ask your best friend how they would describe you, what do you think they would say?
That's a great question. I think, well, my best friend would probably be my wife. So, and they would definitely be very biased.
But they would, in a good way, they would
say, yeah, in a good way. I think if my best friend were to describe what I'm like, I think, firstly, probably one of the kindest persons they've met, and also a little bit cheeky, loves a good crack, a good joke here and there.
Oh, that's lovely. A kind, cheeky chappy. And if you were to say, no, I'm this, what would you add to that that you feel somebody else might not have identified, although I'm sure pretty close your wife will be to you, she'll know exactly. But what would you add to it that you feel might have been missed, or any nuances?
You're straight in with some difficult questions. To be fair, I wear my heart on the sleeve. I'm pretty open. I'm pretty transparent about who I am. So I wouldn't say that there's as much behind the scenes that someone wouldn't know about me. So
yeah, amazing.
I don't think that there's anything to add to that, honestly. Yeah. Obviously, we're all way more complex than how we could probably describe in words. But, you know, I think keeping it a kind, cheeky chappy might be a good way to start. And if anyone if anyone else wants to continue, get to know me a bit better, jump into the kind community, you know, send me a DM, and always looking forward to making new friends that are trying to make the world a kinder, healthier, more sustainable place.
Yeah, we'll get into that. We will share your the way people can contact you once people get to know you a bit more. So let's just look at the word kind. It's not a word you hear very often these days, is it? It's not a word. I mean, we do, I think, perhaps in our home life, in our kind of real immediate nucleus communities. But, you know, it's not like a mainstream. You don't hear it on the news, or you don't hear it kind of in the mainstream. So tell me, what does kind mean to you?
You're right in that we don't hear it often, probably in our day to day. I think for me, probably that comes down to, it's quite a simple word. And I think also people have different nuances and different beliefs of what it actually means. But for me, I think that if you are kind in your decision making, kind in your actions, that I believe that that will always play out to a better future. And the reason I came and landed on the name of our business being called Kind is because I spent some time thinking about how complex sustainability is, the climate crisis, all of these interconnected issues that we're trying to face and communicate with the world. And I realized that in order for it to be clear, it needed to be simple. And for me, kindness is the simplest form of sustainability.
I love that. I love that, because it's being kind to yourself. It's being kind to your business, you know, people, your team. It's being kind to, you know, the planet, etc., etc. So just tell us, what is the kind community then? So you talked about it as your brand, as your business. What actually is that?
Well, Kind Community exists to help businesses and leaders scale their businesses and try to positively impact people and planet. The way that it came about was a few things, but essentially, I think that through collaboration, we will be able to reverse and positively impact people much more than we would do on our own. Because if we think about it, the climate is in its current condition because of millions, if not billions, of tiny actions that have happened over time that, when on their own, maybe didn't raise any eyebrows, didn't cause for concern. But when it's compounded up, we're here where we are today. So therefore, if we want to change that going forward, we need collective action.
So the Kind Community is a community of what kind of people or organizations?
Yeah, Kind Community exists of founders, business owners, investors, and ecosystem players. Call them ecosystem because they are also business owners that support the primary core community members, which are generally business owners, founders of sustainable businesses, that their aspect of building businesses are sustainable businesses or climate positive ethical businesses. The things that you and I love, the things that you and I tend to consume, the brands that are on your marketplace and the brands that you've been championing over the years tend to be the same businesses that are in our community.
Yeah. And for those that are listening in and you don't know much about the background, so my business is My Green Pod. We've been in the space for 15 years, and we've essentially gone out and found lifestyle brands that are better. Nothing's perfect, but that are much better for people and planet. So non-toxicity, recyclable, non-plastic, et cetera. So all of those things that count for sustainability. So would you say that most of the businesses, if not all of the businesses within your community, are sustainable? Is that right?
Yeah, in the shortest way of responding to that question, yes, the companies that are within our community, on the whole, are better than the alternatives, and the reason for that is because I wouldn't, if I have a skill, I have a capacity, I have experience in building sustainable businesses, and therefore for the rest of my life, why would I want to give that skill set and that value and that energy to a business that is extractive or isn't voting for the future world that I want? So, many years ago, I decided, right, my commitment for as long as I am on this world and able to, I want to contribute to the growth and the consumption of better products, better services, and therefore vote with my time, which is ultimately the most valuable thing to me in the future that I want.
Yeah, lovely. I use that line all the time. Be the change you want to see in the world. It's like the kind of Gandhian. And I remember, just for those that are listening in, I remember the first time I heard Jenna speak. It was on Clubhouse, funnily enough. It was during the pandemic. And we were on a sustainability community. There's loads of people there. There's hundreds of people there. And he spoke. And the words that came out of his mouth were like, oh my God, I could have been saying this. It was like exactly the same kind of words that I used to use. So that's why I knew that we were kindred spirits. So and I still remember that vividly. It challenged me in a way that I was like, what how can this guy be out there doing that? That's what I do. But there is no competition, right, in the work that we do, because it's really trying to create a better world for everybody. All right, so where did it all start? So have you always been this kinder entrepreneur? And would you say that you're an entrepreneur? Were you a business leader? Were you a pioneer? What would be the best description? I think all of the above, probably.
I think so. Looking back at my entrepreneurial journey, as you call it, I don't think I knew what entrepreneurialism was when I first started out. I grew up in the countryside in Kent in southeast England, so I was always out in nature. Loved nature. In fact, I remember begging my mum to paint a jungle scene on my bedroom wall. I grew up listening to David Attenborough, watching David Attenborough. I love nature shows. Anyway. When I
Nice.
was at secondary school and wanted certain things, I didn't have a huge allowance given to me or pocket money, as it were. So, and my mum and dad always taught me that if I wanted something, I would have to work for it, earn it, and essentially pay my own way. So I started doing that. I had like the biggest newspaper round you could possibly get in the village. Yeah, I
Backbreaker.
don't think that did my back any good. And I also figured out certain ways of making sure that I earned a bit more money. So with the newspaper round, you get paid per paper that you deliver or the total round, but you also got added bonuses if you added leaflets. Like, so certain brands would market into the newspaper and they would pay you an extra commission if you did that. And I always asked for the most amount of advertising leaflets in this newspaper. So not it was very, very heavy. So I made a bit of money, and then I kind of through school was selling sweets. I bought them at bulk and then sold them individually in the school for a bit. So that was, I guess, like my first kind of like entrepreneurial endeavor, making a bit of
I
extra
love that.
money. And then it evolved into like selling Tamagotchis that were
Oh, yeah.
like on trend back when I was in school. So I'd buy like five or six, sell them at a bit of a premium, like extra rare ones that you couldn't necessarily get in the shops. So that then paid for my own Tamagotchi that I wanted. And I guess from there, kind of this evolved. My first job, official job, was selling advertising in newspapers. It was like door to door and telesales. So really refined my craft of selling, not understanding the certain nuances between people's tonality, pausing, and how to say certain things that captured your prospect's attention to then be able to hopefully close the deal and hit your goals, hit your targets. My second job was head of business development and marketing for a renewable energy company in the Southeast. And we were around the time when the government used to pay subsidies for producing renewable energy. So that was pretty exciting. Brought me into the world of kind of like renewables and clean energy, which was super, super exciting for me. And that, I guess that kind of was the start of knowing that people were willing to purchase and get into sustainability. But actually, the truth behind it was that people weren't necessarily doing it to save the planet. They were doing it to mitigate any increase in energy prices, perhaps even earn some money off of the government. When you, back in the day, when you produced a certain amount of kilowatt hours, the government would pay you. Mm. And some people were actually making quite a bit of money by just installing solar panels. So although, yes, they were taking a great step in producing renewable energy, which is a bonus, they weren't necessarily saying, sign me up because I fundamentally believe that I want to do good in the world. They're really just saying it, this produces a better return than my money in the bank. So that was kind of like a step forward.
And probably quite a wake-up call as well, because you were kind of thinking people are doing this for sustainability, and actually it was just another way to earn money. But actually there's nothing wrong with that, of course, but it's
that's exactly it, Jarvis. But I don't think I realized it in the moment. I'm only saying that back with hindsight to you now and to your audience. I think from there was I then went on and kind of was sold this lifestyle that you wanted, needed to be super successful, earn all the money you possibly can, and was sold a lie, really. But I was on, when I was much younger, on that dream, and worked in the city for a headhunting company, and was placing insurance underwriters, insurance brokers into various positions across insurance and construction specifically. And a lot of the underwriters that I was placing started talking about climate risk and like weather. They were calling it weather catastrophes, bad weather that would then impact basically when buildings caught on fire or got blown down or wiped away by tsunamis, these big insurance companies would have to step in and pay for the repairs of the city that's been destroyed. And that just kept happening more frequently. So I guess a little seed was planted back then. But my own step into me being into this whole sustainable entrepreneurship came from when I quit that job to start a sustainable fashion care brand called Liquidproof. And that stemmed from me really, really, really hating aerosols. I spray it, like, I don't know why, but it really affects me. I can't be around aerosols. I hated the Lynx effect. And so I was like, firstly, I was spending a lot of money on looking good, suits, very expensive suede shoes. And when you're traveling to London and the UK weather, they get ruined by the weather or people treading on them. And the protector spot, to protect the product, needed an aerosol usually. So I did a hell of an amount of research trying to find a protector spray that would repel stains and essentially keep me from damaging my garments. That didn't exist. So I developed it. I worked with partners to develop a formulation that was not only odorless, non-toxic, non-aerosol, it actually repelled the majority of stains and liquids, and it could be applied to any material. Fast track that to, what does that mean? It means that if I spray it on my shoes and I potentially go to ruin them, that doesn't happen. And therefore they stay out of landfill. You wear them longer. And that then played out to the whole piece of people investing in slightly nicer items that were usually more sustainable, and they could keep them from being damaged. So they would save money and it would reduce the impact of water, chemicals, because I don't know if you know, but the fashion industry is one of the second largest polluters in the planet. Mm. And a lot of that happens not only in factory, but also the customers owning the garments through how often they wash it, the detergents they use, how long do they keep it, and where do they end up putting it once it happened to be damaged or they just didn't want it anymore.
Yeah, Jenna, let me stop you there because we need to cut to a commercial break. But this is just, thrilling. So I do need to come back to you on it. But let me stop you there. We'll cut to a commercial break and we'll be coming back to that moment right there. See you in a minute.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back. I'm Jarvis Smith. This is Lean Into Clean. I'm here talking to Jenna Velli. We're just deep in conversation, but his organization is called The Kind Community. But we were talking about Liquid Proof. Is that the brand name?
That's
I mean,
the
it
one.
Sounds thrilling. Did you invent this product, or did you come across it, or how did you find it?
Well, in short, it didn't exist. I was trying to find a protector spray that not only repelled stains, but also wasn't toxic or carcinogenic or an aerosol, because I was, that really affected me. It didn't exist. Yeah. Hell of an amount of research put into it, and we formulated a product that was odorless, water-based. It was so safe you could drink it. I actually did that a couple of times on Facebook Live back in the day. But when you have a product like that, it really wows people, stops people in their tracks, and that ultimately helped it be quite successful.
And was your, I mean, I understand, it's funny because I come across so many founders and entrepreneurs and brand developers and creators that couldn't find something in the market. Essentially, it's often around beauty or cleaning or something like that. They're toxic, they're, ingredients, etc., that are not right for their skin or for their families or for whatever, and they create something. And there's loads of that going on. So hats off to you, first of all, for creating something that wasn't there. And actually very personal to you, because you were really making it for you, but I guess you understood very quickly there was a market for it. So what came next?
A very, very quick, fast, steep learning curve. Like you said, I created it, had these like really ugly tester bottles that I would use and spray and be like, right, this didn't quite work. Let's go again. So after a few months of iteration and improvement, we finally had a product that I wanted to release to the market. It wasn't the prettiest. It wasn't the most amazing, visually pleasing product, but the stuff inside worked. And then at the time I was doing this on the side, and I said to my bosses, look, I'm out really. I'm going to start this footwear protector business called Liquid Proof. And they said, fantastic. Wish you all the best. I'll buy a couple of bottles from you before you leave and off you go. So that then, spurred me on with a bit of, confidence. I then did what most new entrepreneurs do. We try to sell it to more people. I showed up in every possible place that I thought people would want to buy a protector spray. I built a website, a very ugly-ish website, but it seemed to convert. Learned a bit more about conversion rate optimization, so I sold even more. Tried a bit of like social media ads and organic content. That then grew the business even more. So as I said, steep learning curve, trying everything. Didn't understand the first thing about websites and paid ads or anything, but had to learn quickly to ultimately pay for my way and keep this business keeping the lights on. Fortunately enough, I was able to figure it out very quickly. And in the first 6 months, we were profitable. We were about to be stocked in about 150 stores. And that came about being invited to pitch to Office Group, which have 150 stores. They sell a lot of trainers and footwear. Mm-hmm. And went in to their head office and showed them how good the product was. It wowed them. And then suddenly I was stepped into wholesale. So I was selling my product to another business that would sell it to their customers. Mm. And if you think about it, when you buy a new pair of sneakers or a new pair of UGG boots, you want to keep them looking like that for as long as possible. So I essentially gave Office Group a way of improving their products. Most people swerved buying certain styles of products because they were prone to damage. I enabled them to sell more of those products, which were generally the more sustainable ones, and they would last longer. Yeah. And then 3 years on, we got invited onto Dragon's Den, where I stood in national TV, stood in the children's paddling pool, and I poured a bottle of cheap red wine over my suit and it rolled off. And the Dragon invested. So I got investment from Tuka Suleiman at the end of that show, and walked out of there. Firstly, like, what did I just do? And how is this going to be received when they actually air the show?
Yeah.
And a few months later, I'm sat there and you know, they announced that I'm going to be on the show in a week's time, and stress kicks in, and you try and make, then, you know, make sure we've got all the product, we've got more stock, we've got packaging, we've got the team ready to go, websites firing on all cylinders. And when it aired, we sold out in like 6 minutes. It was the craziest 13 minutes of my life.
The power of TV, yeah?
Yeah, I think, like they say, estimated just over 5 million people watched that show. The site crashed. We sold out on every retailer that we sold through, which was very good. We trended one of the most popular products on Amazon for 2016. And the rest, I guess, started to snowball off the back of that, because prior to being on Dragon's Den, our product was very visually pleasing. But I guess we didn't, the product, most of our customers would say, is it as good as it says? Like, we see your videos and it seems like CGI. It doesn't seem real. But when we went on Dragon's Den and we had the backing of BBC, we could say, well, the BBC wouldn't bring us on.
Yeah.
The Dragon wouldn't invest if it wasn't real.
Yeah.
And after that, we expanded our retailer list, our partner list all over the world. And we helped potentially millions of people save footwear that they would have otherwise thrown away, jackets, suits, stay out. There's probably jackets still in the market today, 5-6 years on, that's still protected by their original spray of Liquiproof. And I'm, you know, pleased to say that I've been able to contribute to that.
Nice. What a great story. I love that. I love that. So I'm going to, you know, I'm going to ask you more about now how you're now using that wisdom and learnings to help your community. But before we do that, I always ask my guests, is there a bit of music, a song out there that really is a soundtrack to this thing that we are calling the climate crisis, and soundtrack to your life and the way you operate in the world? And I'm going to ask you to play your first song. So what song have you chosen?
So the first one for me is Nelly, Hot In Here. And the reason
Nelly, yeah, great record. Don't tell us the reason you chose it yet. Let's let everybody hear it, and then you can tell me afterwards why you chose it. So this is Nelly, It's Getting Hot In Here. I love that record. It brings back such memories of just going to those R&B clubs and dancing and dancing and dancing. Thanks for bringing that back into my memory. Why did you choose this song, Jenna?
Like you, I it brings back fond memories of being in the club, or, you know, just I guess maybe slightly less stressful days. But really, it's a play on words. Like, The world is getting hotter. You said it at the beginning of the show. It was the hottest year on record. It is only getting hotter. And that's why I chose the song.
Yeah, brilliant, brilliant. It's a great record for the climate crisis. I'm surprised I haven't heard it a lot more, actually. I think you'll be inspiring a mainstream news to use it on their broadcasts. So let's move on to Kind Community. So your brand now today, you know, winding forward from that experience that you've had of, you know, developing, creating, marketing, becoming successful with a brand, is there anything else to add to that story, or are we ready to move into the now and what you're doing now?
Yeah, well, there is a connection there. When I was building Liquid Proof, I'd be approached by some really interesting founders. I would discover other business owners that were developing sustainable solutions. And they would come to me and ask me, how did I do certain things? Like, how did you grow the business? How were you able to put out content the way you are? How were you able to be successful? And can you teach us? And I thought, yeah, for sure. So I started sharing my story, sharing how I did certain things and aspects. And I realized that there were some incredible people out there that had developed fantastic products, were doing good in the world. They were very much tech product focused. They'd spent so much time developing something that did good, but they didn't necessarily understand the rest of building a business, didn't know the art and science of storytelling, certainly didn't know how to run high return on ad spend Meta or Facebook or Instagram ads. So how were they able to be successful? So knowing, you know, being armed with all my experience, I realized that I was able to amplify my impact. I got Liquid Proof to a stage that it pretty much ran itself. Team ran everything pretty successful, and I'd made my mark, and I didn't want that to be the only thing that I had done. I'm, you know, still relatively young, and I didn't want to grow old and have my great, great, great grandkids come back to me and say, Jana, you could have done so much more. Granddad, why didn't you try to have a wider impact? So armed with that, I thought, well, I'm sure I can share more about my experiences and tangibly help these business owners scale. And fundamentally, if I can help them shortcut their success, we can shortcut the rejuvenation of this planet by people consuming better products. And that's where it all kind of stems down to. And that's why Kind Community exists, to help scale sustainable businesses that do good in the world.
Yeah, nice. I mean, is it fair to say, and we're going to get onto that, is it fair to say that the Dragon's Den part was the massive uplift in that? And, you know, not everybody's going to get that moment, are they? So I want to pick up on that a little bit, because presumably that propelled the notoriety of the brand and made it mainstream. You got out in front of 5 million people in, you know, 3 or 4 minutes pitch or whatever you did on Dragon's Den. But I guess the difficult bit is the aftercare of that, isn't it? It's like keeping the momentum. It's obviously the product worked, but it sounds like it's a product that you only buy once. You have to keep getting new customers, right?
Yeah, very true. And that, again, one of the lessons I've learned is you could have moments of high level of exposure. Like actually today, it's so much more likely that a brand could go viral across TikTok, Instagram, have their moment on national TV or radio, have an influencer love the product and showcase it across their socials, and it not actually amount into too much stuff. That becomes unsustainable. So what I realized was there needed to be a system, a framework in place to consistently capture, convert customers so that they love the brand. They keep consuming, and ultimately the best trick for that, not trick, but if you can keep your customers happy, they are going to refer their friends and family.
Yeah, yeah.
And that,
so
in
word,
itself,
word of mouth is still so powerful, isn't it? So we're going to cut to another commercial. Jenna, we're going to cut to another commercial break. Let's come back to that word of mouth, because this is vital. And I really want to get into the science of this now, because we're getting into, I'm sure there'll be loads of people out there thinking, oh, I've got a product, or I've just started a business, or I want to do this. So we'll cut to commercial break, and I'll be back to you in a moment.
The station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to Lean Into Clean. This is Jarvis Smith. I'm in conversation with Jana Velli from the Kind Community. We are just getting into, I think, the kind of most crucial part of this is that if there's anybody out there that's, you know, had an idea about creating or inventing a product, or come across something that you think you can make better, more sustainable, more accessible, that people want it, then, you know, this is your moment. Soak this up like a sponge. Jenna's had some great success, has now built a community of kind business people that are creating better products for a better world. So, Jenna, into the science of it. So tell us now, just kind of what's next? So you've got an idea, you've got the product, you realize people want it, you've tested it amongst friends and family, you know, you've maybe even done a little bit of, you know, built a website, et cetera, but what's next?
What's next in that journey is ensuring that people that don't like you or you don't know also wants to buy it. Like, I think oftentimes we go to the safe space, we go to our comfort zone and we try and sell it to our family and friends. And sometimes our family and friends buy it just because they are our family and friends. But realistically, let's just say that you have been able to break through to new audiences. People love your product, which is fantastic. I always say that in order to be successful in growing, scaling a business, start with building a very high quality product, because the best form of marketing is happy customers. If you can get happy customers, they will then share that with the world, with their family, friends, and you get word of mouth referrals. And that in their sense are the best type of referral. They don't cost the company anything, and they tend to actually stay with the brand and purchase the brand for longer and drive up lifetime value. So how do you do that? You've got to understand, how do you communicate? How do you take your product, your service, and communicate that to a world where they want it? You want to make sure that you are going to where your customers are. And in today's world, that is predominantly online. You know, we've got billions of people using Facebook and Instagram and now TikTok literally every single day, almost some people's screen time is crazy. So they're online, and use those channels to tell them about your product. It's your duty to share your amazing product with the world. So learn how to communicate and create content that resonates with your audience. The thing that I see most oftentimes where business owners go wrong, or, you know, founders, is that we are very heavily focused on the product, and we tend to lead with features rather than benefits. You want to try and share how the product makes people feel, how it solves their problem, and maybe step away from the product in itself. So the analogy I like to use is sell the whole, not the drill bit. And that should help you convert more people. Once you start converting people, you've then got more revenue.
Yeah, I like that. I like that analogy. I've not heard that one. Yeah.
Thank you. Well, look, so now you're into the swing of things. You're selling to people that don't know you. How do you convert that person? Is hopefully a website. And I think it's very cost effective to set up a website. My favorite is Shopify. They're also on climate neutral servers, which adds a bonus. But you can build a site in a matter of days and be able to turn visitors into customers. And if you can do that over and over again, fantastic. You're moving forward. The thing is that almost 95% of all visitors to a site don't convert. So how do you capture that audience? You want to own the data. So rather than just having a website, try to have an email pop-up that captures your visitor's email address or mobile number, so that you can continue to communicate with them even once they've left the site. So if your conversion rate at the moment of a site is like 3%, that means 97% of your audience leaves. Mm. And if you can try and capture the data, you'll be able to more likely convert them, tell them more about your product, the story, the why behind you create, why you created it. Try and paint a picture of them successfully using your product to solve one of their problems. Because if it's working for you, it's likely to work for someone else. Someone else may have eczema and can't use a certain type of cream. So if you share that story, oftentimes the founder story is the most powerful story that you can communicate as a business owner. So yeah. Share that story.
Yeah, we found that. I mean, as you know, one of the things we pride ourselves in at My Green Pod is not only finding brilliant brands and products that you're talking about, is also meeting every founder and speaking to them and seeing the light in their eyes and seeing where their heart is and seeing what they're what their values are, and as you say, the why. So no, I really appreciate that. I think we've lost the human, haven't we, when it comes to consumerism? We've lost the human part. You know, behind every product is a person, behind every company is a team, and behind every sale is a customer. And then, you know, these are people, right? So I love that. I love that about you, and I love the kind. I want to come into next. I want to come into some of the things that you're doing. You know, how are you working with the community? How are you reaching them? How can people contact you? But before we do that, we're running out of time. This time goes so quickly on this show. What's your second song? What are you gonna play as your second song?
The second song that I've chosen is Higher Love by Kygo and Whitney Houston.
Oh, love this record. So this is Higher Love, Kygo and Whitney Houston. Oh, I love Whitney Houston's voice. I'm sorry we had to cut that short, but you can find the song on the Spotify, wherever she listens to music. Other brands to apply. So, you know, Jenna, we've got 5 minutes left. You know, this shows just go so quickly. There's so much brilliant information in it. But let's just cut to the chase. How do people find you and the community if they are looking to develop their business or start a business? What's the go-to?
The website is kind.community.
Okay, so it's kind.community, brilliant. And what plans have you got? Like, what's going on in the foreseeable future? And also social media as well, please.
Yeah, for sure. So we're also discoverable across all social media channels. We even had our own podcast called The Kind Community Show. So search Kind Community and you'll find us. How do we help businesses going forward? So being a consultant, being an advisor, my time is super limited and I want to try and impact as many businesses as possible. So what I've done is try to, I guess, put into practice and put on paper my experiences, the lessons that I often teach. So we have created a virtual accelerator program to enable us to impact 10 to 20 companies at a time in scaling purposeful profits. So everything that I would otherwise teach and do one-to-one advisory on, I've put it into a group learning program called the Purposeful Profits Program, which is actually launching on the 5th of February. So if anyone in the audience is keen to accelerate their growth as a purpose-driven founder, go to purposefulprofits.co.
Purposeful Profits. Okay. And this is the first one you've launched?
It is, yeah. So it'll be the first group session that we've done. All of the things that we are teaching come from my own experience of taking Liquidproof Global, but also refining that approach to numerous clients that have worked with me over the last 4.5 years of building Kind Community. And we've put it into a program. And I've also brought along a brilliant team of other advisors and mentors to, I guess, teach what they know alongside the things that I know. And they're definitely better at certain things than I am. So it's always helpful.
Yeah, brilliant. And just for anybody that's listening, I have been invited to be one of those mentors, guides, wisdom keepers, whatever, haven't I? So thank you for inviting me to do that, Jenna. Listen, it's been an absolute pleasure. You always bring a smile to my heart when I see you or connect with you. You've got, you know what, when I asked you at the beginning, how would your best friend describe you? I would agree. You do seem to be an incredibly kind individual, a rare being, actually, particularly in the world of business, because it's a, you know, it's not a great world, particularly in the old paradigm, the way it's been set up. And we are trying to change and break the, you know, boundaries and break through the glass ceiling on many effects when it comes to business and put profit to good use, right? Create purpose for profit rather than profit for profit's sake. So, Jenna, it's been wonderful. Anybody listening, reach out to Jenna Vili through the kind.community or the Kind Community on social media. And just remind us again, if people want to join your cohort.
So if people want to join the cohort, apply via purposefulprofits.co or discover us via kind.community. It all leads to the same place. So thank you again. I really appreciate the kindness, Jarvis, and having me on the show.
It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. And I'd love to have you back after you've done your first cohort so we can talk about some of the successes, some of the brands, and maybe we can get some of your brands on the show. That would be cool, wouldn't it?
Would love to. That would be amazing. Thank you for that.
It's a pleasure. Nice to see you. And I hope to see you in person very, very soon. So that brings us to the end of the show. As you know, we always end Lean Into Clean with, you know, I guess a bit of a self-shameless promotion, but not for my own purpose. As you know, I recorded a song in partnership with working with Greta Thunberg's Fridays for Futures Mapper, the most affected people and areas, which are even more affected after the hottest year in history and all of the weather patterns that are going on. I mean, right now on the planet, we've got volcano eruptions, earthquakes, floods, cold and heat. I mean, you know, it's crazy right now. So this song is to raise money for Greta Thunberg's Fridays for Futures Mapper, most affected people in areas. It's called goodness me, I've forgotten what the song's called. I've just had a completely blank of mind. it's called Save the World. And this is it to play out. Thanks again for having me. Thank you to Jenna, and I look forward to seeing you all next week.